Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 16th, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday. And as we do every week, we look back on the week that was, and oh, what a horror show. Joining me to look back fondly on the crap fest that was this week in the Donald Trump era, Benjamin Dixon of the Benjamin Dixon Show. Also on the program today, ostensibly to give us a film recommendation, but to recount his run-in with Governor Andrew Cuomo. Matthew Film Guy, live in studio, hawking eBay wares. Meanwhile, McMaster out-ish as Kelly and Trump make up for the time being. Meanwhile, Congresswoman Louise Slaughter, rest in peace, passed away at age 88. Robert Mueller digging deep into Trump's finances, subpoenas the Trump Organization. At least six dead in a pedestrian bridge collapse in Florida from a construction firm that had received multiple warnings. Philly becoming a model for big city criminal justice reform. Elections matter, folks. And Trump's opioid plan may include the death penalty for dealers. Look for pharma execs to flee the country. Stormy Daniels allegedly physically threatened and could be now one of seven women with a similar story, according to her attorney. There's a correction in the Gina Haspel story. And all this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. It is Casual Friday. As is my tradition, I am wearing a soft-collared shirt to express the fact that I am casual. I'm also wearing a hoodie today, which you can see if you are if you wander over to our YouTube channel. I got so casual today, I'm going to be honest with you folks. I didn't even shower this morning.
Oh, me neither.
The commenters are worried that you're wearing a hoodie and Michael's missing.
Michael is not here today. I have taken to the hoodie for some time, so it's not a function. I didn't murder Michael to get his hoodie. Michael is, I don't know where Michael is. He's sick. My guess is, if you see him out and about, though... Because this happens all the, you know, I would say, you know, twice a week. I'm on the streets of New York City. Maybe I'm getting off the subway. The other day I had a slightly embarrassing situation where I'm walking down Broadway. And there's a guy who is trying to get the attention of a police officer. Or maybe she was a parking, I don't know. I think she was a cop. And I'm watching him, and he's going, "Officer, officer," and she basically just turns and walks away from him. And I go to him, like, "Better luck next time, buddy." And then he goes, "Sam Cedar?" And it was sort of embarrassing, because it was one of those things where, like, I mean, I was being friendly. It was a funny moment, because we were sort of looking at each other like the cops and avoiding us. But then you don't want to then be like, "Oh, I know who you are." Now you said that, like, smart alecky comment. but he was a fan of the show. So my point being, if you see Michael wandering around, my guess, he's probably not even in town. I think he probably left. This is probably a long weekend, and he's like claiming he's still sick. So
we're Jewish on both sides. What's his excuse?
That's I don't know. He's that's a great question. He's not a purebred Jew, and so one would imagine that he'd be a lot healthier. But he doesn't bring in a doctor's note, so I can't confirm anything. Folks, if you are like Michael, maybe going on a trip, a weekend trip or something like that, I have the perfect piece of luggage for you. I've talked about Away multiple times, and I now have two pieces of Away luggage. Away offers high-quality luggage. It's designed to be resilient. It is. I don't know if it's like ballistic material, but it's hard case shell. It's resourceful and essential to the way you travel. It's available in a variety of colors and four sizes. I think they have 8 colors now, 4 sizes. I have size, I guess they don't number them, but I have the small carry-on and then not the big carry-on, but then the medium size one. And I got that. This is how it happened with me. So they sent me the carry-on to check it out. I loved it. And then we got a big suitcase, and it doesn't, you know, it's getting ratty, and I could put the smaller one inside that one, but it sort of felt like it was not a perfect fit. And these are built to fit inside each other. And then I was just like, you're 51 years old. Get a nice set of luggage. Now I'm also, I also appreciate things that are not too expensive. And so Away was perfect for me. It has carry-on sizes that are compliant with all U.S. major airlines. The Away suitcase is lightweight, super lightweight, made with premium German polycarbonate that's unrivaled in strength and impact resistance. Not to mention it features a TSA-approved combination lock, 4 360-degree spinner wheels. That's also huge, because I used to be one of those guys who just like, I don't need it. I don't need 4 wheels. It's such a better thing to have 4 wheels. And a patent-pending compression system to help overpackers. Better yet, both sides of the carry-on are able to charge anything that's powered by a USB cord. A single charge will power your iPhone 5 times. Now, they're not letting... Or in some instances, if you get, you know, if you walk on with your carry-on and then they say like, oh, our bins are overfilled, you need to pack your suitcase, you're not supposed to have the battery in there. And Away, they give you a little like TSA screwdriver that you could take the battery out immediately. So somebody had asked me about that, but it's the suitcase, it's, I don't want to say it's fundamentally changed my life, but it has when I travel. Everything else in my life is almost exactly the same. Try out Away for 100 days. Vibe with it. Travel with it. Instagram it. I don't know. You can Snapchat it. Post it on all the new. There's like a rival Instagram. If at any point you decide it's not for you, you return it with a full refund. That's after 100 days. Shipping is free within the lower 48 states. And thanks to Away's lifetime warranty, if anything breaks ever, they'll fix it. So you have nothing to lose. For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/majority. Use promo code majority during checkout. That's awaytravel.com/majority. Promo code majority for $20 off your Away suitcase. You will not regret it.
Looks like they're resistant to cat scratches too.
They don't. I wouldn't have known that they were German polycarbonate, but I can tell you that the shells are super strong. They're super light.
My cats love to scratch my suitcases, so that's good to know.
No, this is it. If you're in the market for suitcase, you look at your suitcase and it's a piece of junk. I'm telling you. Feels good to be able to promote a product that you use and you like. All right, speaking of which, well, this has nothing to do with that. What is going on with Ryan Zinke? This dude is he's having a rolling meltdown. Now, and Ben Dixon and I are going to talk about this more, but there seems to be like a wholesale just sort of like cleaning out of the administration. It's not like they, you know, God knows the quality of the people they're going to get in. I mean, as much as despicable as Gary Cohn was, Larry Kudlow is not an upgrade, folks. Here's Ryan Zinke. He's at the House National Resources Committee Thursday hearing. The other day we played a clip where he was getting wholly and righteously indignant over having to explain why he was taking a private jet to Las Vegas. Never actually explained it, but he was certainly insulted. And here is Representative Hanabusa of Hawaii. She is talking about the National Park Service program that gives grants towards the preservation of Japanese American confinement camps, right? This is a real black mark on our history. And we're not talking about a huge amount of money. Hanabusa is explaining why, what the importance of it to her, but also to Americans of Japanese descent. And Ryan Zinke, I guess, I don't know. Wait till his response. I guess he's trying to sort of say, like, I feel you, but here it is.
I didn't find out about the fact that my grandfather was interned on Oahu for a lot of the wartime until he was 80-something years old because they didn't speak about it. And that's been the problem that many face, the Japanese-Americans who served in World War II, as you know, probably the most decorated unit to date in the history of the military, in the 100th and the 442nd, as well as those who were interned, just did not speak about it. My grandfather was born in Hawaii, and in essence, a citizen by birth, though we were a territory then, and he did not speak about it. This president's budget zeroes out what is, I think, a really nominal amount compared to your whole budget. It's about $2 million. But what it does do is eliminates the grant program that have at least kept various institutions throughout the United States who are trying to keep this history alive, because I believe that it is essential that we as a nation recognize our darkest moments so that we don't have them repeat again. So, Mr. Secretary, I'd like to know, even with the president zeroing it out, are you committed to continue the grant programs that are identified, I believe, as the Japanese American Confinement Sites Grants Program, which were funded in 2017? Will we see it funded again in 2018?
Oh, konnichiwa.
I think it's still Ohayou gozaimasu, but that's okay.
I guess it's after 10.
What did he say? What was the last thing he said? Oh, my God. What is wrong with this guy?
I guess it's after 10.
I guess it's after 10.
Oh, my God. I mean, just... That's his attempt to sort of, I guess, say like, oh, I speak Japanese. So it's okay that I cut this the funding for the Japanese American internment camp museums, essentially.
I'm going to make this about me.
Unbelievable.
I mean, we can go back and forth about how important microaggressions actually are, but I feel like in this context, they definitely matter.
I mean, it's not even so much that it's a microaggression. It is just like this guy thinks that he gets the point of what she's saying and doesn't get the point of it. I mean, can you just imagine, you know, saying like, look, you shouldn't cut the funding for Dachau so that people can go and see how problem it is. And the person just responds with, oy vey, you're right. I didn't quite get it, Zinke. Yeah, I have the bona fides to shut this down because I know that you say you don't say konnichiwa after 10 a.m. Unbelievable. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ben Dixon on the rest of the horrors of the week. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program someone who I've actually been a fan of for, God, I feel like maybe it's like 3 years. Benjamin Dixon of the Benjamin Dixon Show, the founder of the Progressive Army. Ben, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Sam.
So, all right, let's start here. Okay, I'm looking at a Washington Post headline from this morning at 8:52 a.m. Trump may hire multiple cable news personalities as part of a shakeup. Here is the lineup right now. Now, I just read another piece that said that that apparently Flynn and Kelly and Trump have been having a bit of a quarrel, and now they've sort of buried the hatchet for the moment. H.R. McMaster is out, or en route to be out.
Right.
Trump is considering Fox News contributor John Bolton. They're talking about getting rid of David Shulkin from the Veteran Affairs. He had this scandal about paying for his wife's visit to Europe with Pete Hegseth of Fox and Friends Weekend. Larry Kudlow, as you know, has just been named to replace Gary Cohn. Heather Nauert, a former co-host of Fox and Friends, got promoted from being a spokesperson from the State Department to the acting Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs. That's a bit of a
Sam, you're giving me anxiety here. That you're building up the anxiety in me.
Oh yeah,
right now.
Yeah, there should be. We should all be nervous about this. I mean, she's replacing a longtime a diplomat. Guy has worked in the State Department for a long time. This guy, Steve Goldstein, who was fired because he publicly told the truth about Rex Tillerson's firing.
Right, right.
Tillerson's gone. It's not like he was a bastion of diplomatic skill, but at least he seemed to be interested in some form of diplomacy. There's two things that strike me about this, and then I wanted to get your reaction. One is McMaster and Tillerson were the I don't want to say the bulwarks, but were the biggest obstacles to unwinding the Iran deal. And I just saw a piece today, too, where Mattis is now, and Mattis has gone sort of back and forth on Iran, it seems to me. But on yesterday, Mattis accused Iran of using money to sway Iraq's elections, which is a pretty stunning claim, considering we nearly flattened Iraq, which I imagine also influenced elections there. But give me your sense of what's of just how insane this is.
It's madness. I don't think we can overstate that. But, you know, if you consider the fact that Donald Trump really gets his ideas and policy from Fox News every single morning, I think this is the president just streamlining that process. You know, why watch them on the news? I could just put them in the administration. That's honestly the way I see this. And then the second thing, I honestly believe that he is removing any barrier for him to do exactly what he wants to do. Like you said, with Mattis, not Mattis, but Tillerson, they weren't the exact type of diplomats that you would want, but they did stave off any type of serious disaster, or at least they were trying to. And now Donald Trump is going to have a free reign with people like John Bolton. I think that may be the name that gives me the most anxiety, right, because of his just penchant for any war is a good war for him. So these are things that, like, I really think we're going to be led by a Fox News policy outlet now.
I mean, I get the sense, honestly, based upon what we know, look, he just had lunch with Jesse Waters and Seb Gorka. But we know that he's talking to Sean Hannity every day. And I think it's quite possible that Sean Hannity is just basically laying out his entire agenda for him, yeah, and saying, you know, Hegseth, he's a smart dude. He works the weekends here. And honestly, like, I think this is what's happening, and I think you're absolutely right. Over the past, like, 3 or 4 weeks, there's been a couple of stories about how Trump sort of, and you can almost see it, he's been, I hate to say this, but a little bit more confident. He's been,
yeah,
you know, every, yeah, time you see him on TV, he's got the arms folded like El Duce, and there's a quality of, like, he's starting to realize, like, I can do almost whatever I want. Like, I don't need daddy's approval here.
Mm-hmm. I think, Sam, that's the part that's the scariest, right? Because Donald Trump can, you know, I honestly think at this point that bottom percentage, I think, what, 33% at his lowest, those people, it does not matter. He said it during the primaries or during the election that he can shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and get away with it. He's starting to show that to be true, because there's a certain group that will not say anything about what Donald Trump does. Not only that, but they'll explain it away, they'll justify it, and they will try to convince everyone else that this is the smart thing to do. But what's even more worrisome than that base of 33-32% is the percentage above that that gets them close to 49%, maybe 50% in the broader electorate, that are indifferent to what Donald Trump does, like, or they like what he does in terms of tax policy, so that they'll sit back and allow him to do anything else that he wants to do. And now the fact that the emperor has no clothes on, he's really starting to prance around and show the world that, hey, I honestly can do, I can put Fox News consultants or commentators in my cabinet, even though they have no experience whatsoever. This is Trump showing the world that he can shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and get away with it.
And to further that point, this week he was caught on tape in a fundraiser.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about with the Justin Trudeau thing. Speak about that, because the fact that he feels confident enough to sort of, like, concede this. Now, maybe he's just so self-aggrandizing that it's like someone who pulls off, you know, someone who's cheating at cards but brags about it while you're still at the table in some way. Like, this is the guy who usually that guy end up getting shot, you know, in the Westerns or whatever.
Right.
But, all right. So, I mean, just remind people what happened.
So, yeah, with Justin Trudeau, Trump was just at a fundraiser this week, and he bragged about not having any information or any evidence to substantiate the claim that he asserted against another head of state. He told Justin Trudeau that there is that we have a trade deficit with them. And Trudeau was, of course, like, no, we don't. And they went back and forth to the point where they had to send each of their individual guys out to research it on the spot. But Trump was laughing about the entire time. He knew that he had no idea whether or not we had a trade deficit or not. So it becomes almost a spectacle, right? Does it even matter to people that the president of the United States is lying in, you know, using no information? I was going to say fake news or false information, but a complete absence of information to make an assertion that can cause problems with another head of state. Does that matter to the voters? Well, apparently not, because it's just got washed away with the rest of the news cycle. And so here we are with a president who is not only lying, but also bragging about the ability to lie. And now the worst part of it is that they're all laughing about it. This is a punchline. Well, he's still the president of the United States, mind you. His words still carry a significant amount of weight. And if we're just going to laugh about that, then that doesn't bode well for us going forward.
Well, and all right, I want to push back on the domestic thing for a moment, in a moment. But the implications of this in terms of you know, and maybe it's quite possible. I mean, I think it would be hard to believe that the rest of the world's leaders weren't already sort of at the conclusion that Donald Trump has no idea what he's talking about.
And yeah, that's true.
That has, I mean, at what that has implications, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I don't think that broadly speaking, we as a general population are not terribly sensitive to foreign policy because we've always been on the, we haven't been on the receiving end of a lot of decisions that are made around the world, right? I mean, the U.S., if anybody spent any time outside of the U.S., you get a lot more news about the U.S. in other countries than we do about other countries here. And part of the reason is just because we are the 800-pound gorilla. And so we're not necessarily sensitive to the implications of other countries saying, like, we can't trust the United States, the leader of the United States, and therefore we cannot trust the United States because the people elected this dude. And so there must be something really mentally wrong with that entire population. Like, that's the sign of a really unstable country to elect a guy who is bragging about lying about knowing anything about what he's talking about. And at one point, and it may be 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, 2 years down the road, who knows? It's going to start becoming apparent to us here, just sitting in our offices, that something's different because the rest of the world is functioning in a different way towards us. And that at one point that's going to have implications, won't it?
Right. No, I could see some immediate implications coming around the corner. Let's think about what's going to happen between President Trump and Kim Jong-un coming up in, I think, May. You know, any type of negotiations that they may be able to, you know, let's set aside the fact of the spectacle around it, the potential disaster just because of the madness of Donald Trump. The fact that we have a president who can't keep his agreements. He's going to try to get us out of the Iranian nuclear deal now that he's getting rid of the barriers to that. This doesn't really set up a stage where North Korea can actually trust any deal that's made with the United States. Now, notwithstanding the fact that we have trust issues with them, they didn't keep their commitment to Bill Clinton, et cetera. You know, there's plenty of reasons to not trust each other. But now we have the added bonus of a president who is intentionally seeking to undermine our previous agreements and intentionally bragging about his ability to lie to another head of state. I don't think we have to wait 2 or 3 years. I think we're going to see some of that coming up in this this meeting with Kim Jong-un.
My sense is he's going to go into that meeting and just going to go like, I need you to just say you're great and then I'll give you whatever you want. Like, honestly, like, I think he's, you know, I mean, there was that conversation that he had with Nieto, you know, like, you got to just say that you're going to pay for the wall. I just got to do the wall. I have a feeling like he's going in there and his agenda is going to be, what's going to make it look like I did something,
right?
And that he's going to be able, you know, willing to give whatever it takes to walk out of that room and make it look like he did something.
Yeah, that was my other concern. You know, is our national security apparatus really prepared for the president of the United States to go off the cuff and offer something that they may not be willing to offer? You know, the quote unquote deep state. I'm kind of loath to say that word, but there are other forces underneath this, right? There are other considerations, but Donald Trump will completely go off script and do exactly what you said, Sam, and just offer something to make him look good. You know, are our institutions prepared to absorb that? Because now we're committed to it.
Yeah, I would say no. That would be my guess. I mean, it's quite possible they may just ignore him. You know, so I was just talking to somebody about the government shutdown. And I was told that for the first time that they had gone down to D.C. They had a pre-planned trip. They went to the museums and all the national museums were open. And she was asking, like, I thought you'd be closed because of the government shutdown. They said, no, we just decided not to pay attention.
That's golden.
They just stayed open for the first time because they were like, we're just not going to take it seriously. We're just like, there is a certain amount of, I guess, momentum and people just sort of saying like, we, you know, there's no point. there's no point. They don't have the apparatus to make us, you know, to punish us in any way. Hmm. Anyways, like because it's total disarray. But all right, let me just jump back to the domestic thing, because I know that you have some concern that, like, come 2020, the fact that there's no accounting, that Trump seems to be Teflon, that none of this stuff sticks to him.
Mm-hmm.
I think as we look to what happened in Pennsylvania, and I think, and we're seeing this at other places, I think the story about Donald Trump is that he has a sort of an authoritarian base that, like you say, he could shoot somebody in the face. He could shoot all of them in the face, I think. And if they still had the ability to get to the polling place, they would go and vote for him. But I think that what he does more than that is motivate the Democrats. I just think that, like, all of these things, they're, you know, nobody's sitting and marinating in them, but they're just, you know, adding a feather upon a feather upon a feather of a huge pile of feathers that now, like, reach the moon, and they're driving people to the polls. And
right
at, you know, you're not seeing a depressed necessarily Republican turnout, right, but you're seeing an astronomical Democratic turnout. And so you're getting, you know, Connor Lamb winning in Pennsylvania's 18th district. And I don't see that changing.
So I don't see that changing. I think we are going to be tired by 2020, but yes, that won't keep us from being reinvigorated, right? We, you know, as soon as the general election primary season gets off in earnest, I think you're going to see a new energy infused into the left side of the equation. But my honest belief, though, is that, you know, we may get so used to Donald Trump that he becomes the devil that we know. And then the real question will become, who are we offering from the Democratic side of the aisle? Because if we're not offering somebody that can actually compete with Donald Trump, that can actually go toe to toe with him in all of his oafishness and all of his vulgarity, and just stand there boldly and brashly and challenge him without blinking, they have to have a spine of steel. And then they also have to have some policy. If we don't offer somebody that's actually magnanimous enough, then we may settle for the devil that we know, because it's all baked into the pie at this point. It's all baked in at this point. Nothing's going to surprise us about Donald Trump. So the real question is, who are we offering up? Now, the other thing I would say is, down ticket, I think it's a total different scenario, right? I don't think that Donald Trump's coattails are strong at all. I think they're extremely weak.
Right. Nope,
he can't get anyone elected except for himself. And that's my concern, is that we may take over the Senate, the House. We may do good in those regards, but we really still have to put up somebody that's competitive with Donald Trump and offer policy solutions that make people motivated above and beyond the fact that he is a clown and we have to get rid of him.
How much do you think coming out of, you know, the Pennsylvania's 18 that story is being told? I mean, I've got a piece here by Lana Putnam, I think it is. And she wrote, Laura Putnam. She and I've, you know, I have to apologize to my audience because I've referenced this, I think, 100 times now over the past 2 weeks. But she and Theda Skocpol and one other researcher wrote a piece about what they have observed on the ground in Pennsylvania and in Georgia, which tells a story about essentially the mobilization of women in particular, suburban, college-educated, suburban progressives. In this instance, she was in, she's been in Pennsylvania 18th for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Lamb's campaign was powered by two core Democratic constituencies routinely portrayed as irreconcilable: college-educated, suburban progressives, and traditional blue-collar label. It was not the message or messenger that made Pennsylvania's 18th different from 2018 from the past. It was the organizations and the conversations that surrounded them. So basically what we're seeing is people who, it's not necessarily ideology. It is, they are upset about what's happening, broadly speaking. And they're just getting activated to actually do stuff rather than maybe come out and vote. That they're actually creating institutions that are chugging along here that, you know, this could have a lasting impact. But it's interesting insofar as, you know, to the extent that Lamb had any messages, he was not offending. But he, you know, he was not offending some of the sort of the local sensibilities.
Right.
But he also was pushing stuff like Medicare and Social Security and was appealing to unions in a big way. I mean, that's it's interesting. If he was more, if this was Andy Ossoff and he had won, we would, who is it? What is it?
John
Ossoff. If John, it was John Ossoff, we would be hearing about how you can't take any positions, right? We're not hearing so much about this guy's union ties because it's union ties.
I see what you're saying, what you're getting at, particularly with that article you referenced, right? The coalitions that are being built that normally are untenable. But let me ask you this question. Let's say we get beside ourselves and we just really honestly think that anybody can beat Donald Trump, and we put up, you know, God forbid, Tim Kaine. There are some scenarios where we just shoot ourselves in the foot and we will stick with the devil that we know. So I don't think that we should go in with the confidence, the same confidence that Donald Trump should not go into this meeting with Kim Jong-un. Democrats should not go into 2020 with that level of confidence that we could just go in there and say anything and do anything. I still think we have to find someone who is extremely competitive, someone who has ideas that can build a large enough coalition. Just, you know, we need to run a good candidate. And Donald Trump is bad, but we're getting used to his badness. And I think that if we don't take that in consideration and we run somebody, God forbid, like Tim Kaine, we're in trouble in 2020.
I don't think Tim Kaine could win a Democratic primary in this instance. Like, I mean, he would have to be completely reimagined in some fashion, right?
Like, well, just give me an extreme. Like, I agree. I don't think he could get out of the primaries, but I'm just giving an extreme example.
Right. No, I agree with that. I mean, I think everything that we're seeing in now in terms of the most aggressive of the candidates are all, at the very least, paying some lip service to more left politics in the party than someone like Tim Kaine represents. And on some level, you know, like what we saw this week with the Senate rollback of Dodd-Frank, we saw Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders really sticking a wedge into the party and saying, like, look, this is not acceptable. This is not where it's going to, you know, we can't go in this direction, and you're going to pay a price if you do. I mean, it is pretty stunning that on the anniversary of Bear Stearns going down the tubes, you have really anybody rolling back Dodd-Frank, but 12 Democrats doing it. It just seems just insane to me.
And that's part of the equation here, right? That's an example that there are some lessons that they haven't learned or they don't care to learn. And then if people, I'm telling you, man, if people feel that there's not enough difference between the candidate that's running in 2020 and the Republican Party, forget about Donald Trump, because underneath it is still the Republican Party. He is the face of Republicanism. If we don't feel that there's a big enough difference, then you're going to have a relitigation of the god-awful Bernie versus Hillary wars, right? You're going to have the dissension there that we saw in 2016, but also just people are going to be depressed. You know, we still need, as motivating as Donald Trump is in an antagonistic way, we still need somebody with a positive message. And I don't mean positive in terms of platitudes, but in terms of an affirmative policy oriented message that can motivate us to get up and get out.
I mean, I think there's something to be said about the dynamic. Like, we can't necessarily predict what the dynamic is going to be. I mean, never mind the idea of, like, we get used to Donald Trump. I think it is a fairly safe prediction, and I, you know, feel like I should probably be more hesitant about anything that I anticipate as a safe prediction, but that the Democrats will take back the House. The Senate, much trickier. But that the Democrats will take back the House seems like, I don't want to say a foregone conclusion, but a not unreasonable prediction.
Right.
And that's going to change the dynamic, right? I mean, because Donald Trump is not going to be able to get anything. There's not, hopefully won't be any legislation that'll be able to pass. he's going to be whining about it, and he could theoretically start offering all sorts of things that seem somewhat attractive because he doesn't care about, you know, Republican ideology. He doesn't care about anything. He just cares about what's going to, you know, get him in the news. He could start throwing stuff out there that's very attractive as a way of like baiting the Democrats. And I mean, who knows? Maybe Donald Trump is putting out proposals that the Republican Senate is quashing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's conceivable, right?
I absolutely see that as a possibility. I think that's going to happen. Donald Trump has no ideological center or grounding. He just wants some wins. And if his wins can actually make him look better than Obama, he would offer Medicare for all. He'd go for it, right? But so it's going to really take the Senate to block him at that point. And that then changes the entire calculus for 2020. You will see a Republican primary. Jeff Flake is positioning himself right now with his cute little speeches and stuff. But if Donald Trump triangulates to get some wins that pushes him towards the center, not really the left, but center left, maybe center left, then that changes the entire dynamic for 2020.
You know, you mentioned Jeff Flake. We got a little piece of sound of him, and I want to get your reaction to this. He's at St. Anselm College in New Hampshire. And he is, and I think this is where they have a lot of the debates, actually, if I remember correctly. They usually do a debate up here, a primary debates. And he's talking about solar energy, and he's positioning himself as the Republican who is willing to admit that climate change is real. Right, which is laughable, but wait to the deal that he needs to strike with everybody else to concede this.
We get negatively priced electricity from California. There's so much solar being produced in California, they can't use it all. They push it to Arizona during those hours and pay our utilities to take it off the grid. That's led to all kinds of opportunities that we didn't have before that the market is helping out with, particularly as we get more utility scale storage and we've got to also
pause it for one second. And I just want to point out and clarify that when Jeff Flake says the market, what he means is the market plus all of the government subsidies that the Republican Party has maligned for the past 10 years. But go ahead.
I think Republicans as a party need to be more accepting of reality. Climate change is real and it is happening and we need to respond to it. Perhaps on the other side of the aisle, there needs to be a similar recognition that we need a carbon-free baseload power. Nuclear is it. That helps us. We need to compromise on some of these issues and move forward.
Now, give me your take on this, because what I hear him saying is, I'm going to stop beating my child if you buy me a new car. Like, you know, it's like, you know, the idea that somehow the Democratic Party has been, or the other side of the aisle has been building their bona fides on being carbon free baseload power deniers is, I think, a bit of a stretch.
I'm not sure how to take that one. That's the assertion there is. Wow. Jeff. I'm actually speechless here because he's really positioning himself to be something reasonable from the most unreasonable position possible.
Right.
You know, it's really absurd to offer this when there's an entire, you know, there's an entire movement. Like, most people understand where we are. You don't get bonus points for being the Republican that will admit that climate change is real. Like, we have so much further to go than just admitting that it's real. Right. We actually have to start making progress in this regard. And so this is one of those things where I laugh whenever I hear Jeff Flake speak, because he's trying to present himself as the reasonable one when he actually rode into power on the unreasonableness of Republican ideology. So, you know, he's just trying to put back up the facade that Donald Trump brought down. So I really have to digest that one more, but because it seems so absurd at face value.
Yeah. And, you know, I should just remind people, I mean, I don't have a problem with nuclear power in the abstract. I I think there's a lot of reasons to be suspicious of the corporations who have designed these reactors and the way that they will cut corners. But we're also talking about huge, huge, huge government subsidies, which Jeff Flake, of course, will pretend don't exist. Right. Government is horrible, yet we can get these massive, massive subsidies through nuclear. And I think, look, there's room for a rational discussion as to whether or not you do need some type of carbon free baseload power. And if nuclear power is it, and people can argue. But the idea that there's some type of like false equivalency.
Right.
It's just absurd to me. It's just absurd.
That's the part that throws me off, is that his willingness to throw out that he's the balance to this false equivalence that is coming from their side. Right.
Right. Exactly.
It's clear cut. So anyone who's fooled by that, even though it's presented in this moderated tone and it sounds reasonable. I mean, I think that's the perfect example of us being lulled to sleep by the idea of equivalences.
Yeah, I don't think it's lulled. I think it's like beaten into like a sense of exhaustion. Frankly.
That too.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. Lastly, sort of circle it back around. So we're 3 weeks, 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now. Donald Trump has replaced, we're on the White House. We're on the Trump administration, 2.0, maybe 2.750, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And he gets all the Fox News personnel in there. What happens then? Like, what happens when he, after like 3 or 4 months, realizes like, no, I don't like these guys either. Like, what is he going to start just like pulling people from WorldNet Daily TV, or what? Where does he go?
I think he has to. I mean, he has nowhere else to go but put family in there, and you know, he can't really do that. I think at some point he's going to be stuck with the people that he has, right? And I, you know, we are, what version of the administration are we in? Like you said, 2.5. We're getting, you know, there's an entirely different face almost every quarter inside of the administration. So there is a stopping point, because the Senate, everyone's not going to go along with it forever. But I think we're already at the most absurd version of this. Like John Bolton, the host from the weekend show on Fox and Friends. Like this is a level of absurdity that I don't really have the stomach to imagine any further than this. Sam, don't make me imagine further than Fox News in cabinet positions.
Oh my God! The next sound you'll hear will be Benjamin Dixon passing out.
I can't do it, man. It's the weekend. It's happy hour somewhere. Now you're going to make me find a happy hour at 1 o'clock Eastern time.
We're all going to be day drinkers before this is over, folks. Benjamin Dixon, the Benjamin Dixon Show. Thanks so much for your time, Ben. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, man. Take care.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to have a massive treat. Just a massive treat. Joining us in studio, the famous Matthew Film Guy. I guess what we should do is probably play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song.
Oh, yeah.
Should we do that? Folks, just a reminder. This program relies on your membership to continue. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Without our members, we are nothing. We're not even a shell of a shell. So if you have the opportunity, if you have the financial means to become a member, you listen to the show a couple times a week, you want it to thrive, please head over to jointhemajorityreport.com. If you're one of those people who are going through a tough time financially, maybe you have now retired, you're on fixed income, or if you have had an illness in the family or for yourself, or you've lost your job or whatever it is, you send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Have patience. We will get to you. It's not necessary for you to explain anything to us. We'll set you up so that you can listen to the full show at your, as you desire. Because we will not lock anybody out for finances. But if you are one of those people who do have, cash, and you got your cackle and your Showtime and what else? Is there a cackle? Crackle?
Yeah, I think it's crackle.
whatever. Just, people do a lot of a la carte on cable now. And there's always one that you're like, I don't even use that one. I could get rid of that one, send it to the Majority Report, which I listen to every day. So forget Crackle, with all due respect. I don't even know what that is. Like bad movies, right, Matthew?
I think it's comedy, right?
Is it comedy? It might be, oh, all right.
Cackle?
Cackle? Cackle would be funny for
a
comedy.
Better name.
Folks, also, don't forget, Jamie has a Patreon site where she writes stuff that too hot for other places to handle.
Or I'm just tired of pitching stuff.
Right. There you go. This is what the model was. I remember reading a piece about 10 years ago about how artists and journalists and writers would support themselves with via their audience. And it has really come to fruition. It's an interesting time. So head over there. It is patreon.com/JamiePeck. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade, coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. It's a great company out of Madison, Wisconsin. And check out TMBS. You can go to our YouTube page or on iTunes. Or, you know, the best thing to do is both. You know, because every time you subscribe or you give us a review on iTunes for whichever show it is, it helps us. We shoot up in their algorithms. So, all right. Now, what is the name of this Jimmy Reefer Cake song, Matt?
Ode to the Reefer.
Ode to the Reefer. What? Should we go around the horn and anticipate what this is about?
Well, I can't because I know I can see a bit more information.
All right. Well, don't ruin it. Yeah, Jamie, what do you think Ode to the Reefer is going to be about?
I can't possibly begin to guess, but I'm thinking it might actually be a twist and be an ode to himself.
Mmm, it could be Reefer Cake. He's referring to Jimmy Reefer Cake. Have I told the story about the Reefer Cake I had in Jamaica when I was in college?
No. Yeah,
maybe someday I will tell that story. When I was in college, there were major riots in Kingston, Jamaica. And so there were huge sales for spring break. and there was like eight of us who went down there. And we stopped off at Mrs. Brown's. You heard that in the in a Bob Marley song. He sings about it. And it was a cafe. And it opened up to basically, like, I want to say, I don't know, you call it the jungle, but like a deep forest. And guy came down from the woods and like they had like a big basket of what looked like pine cones. They were really dense, huge buds of pot. And then they were making, you know, it was like a little cafe and they were making some type of cake and it was a ganja mushroom cake. And I ate too much of it. And it was about a 36-hour experience that involved, oh boy, I thought.
The era of the pajama boy is over.
Yes, it was. It was a. It was quite an experience. I thought I was going to be shredded alive by a small pelican, and among other things. So I'll tell that story another time. Well, you want me to tell it now, Matthew?
Is it not over?
Well, I mean, I just remember like at one point, like. So John Benjamin was with me. We were friends in college. And, I do remember at one point we were in the van, the guy was taking us to Negril Beach and we were staying in the other place and we rented a guy driving a van. And at one point I remember being in the back of the van and I was sitting in the way back and I saw no one sitting in front of me. The only thing I saw was the front window. And I must have been like, I must have turned completely white and I was gripping on to things because Benjamin turned around and goes, Cedar, are you okay? And I'm like, how fast are we going? Because all I could see It was, I couldn't even see the car. I could just see us like whipping through these roads. And he said something like 180 miles an hour. And I think like I went into like some type of state of shock. Because the next thing I remember, I was in a rum chugging contest at the, and I won, at the place we were staying. And I, apparently I ate an entire loaf of bread and a whole, like six bananas on that trip. Yeah. And then we got back to the place and I thought I was going to be attacked by a, Matthew.
That's heroic.
Yeah, no, it was really.
Did you learn anything about yourself?
Did I learn something about myself? Yes.
Understanding about the nature of life?
Totally. I learned, do not eat mushroom ganja cake. That is what I learned. Like now, and I have followed that rule forever. I've had experience on mushrooms and I've had experiences eating cake. But the mushroom ganja cake, not something you want to mix. Those, it was either the mushrooms, the ganja, or the cake. But I would never have any of those three together.
Yet. You're not. I went through this in Amsterdam. You're not supposed to mix marijuana with psychedelics the first time you do this. One of my friends didn't tell me that after I had taken shrooms and I'll tell that story later.
I had occasion in college where you eat some mushrooms and you're walking around going like, they're not kicking in. They're not kicking in. They are not kicking in. And you eat a little more, they're not kicking in, man. Something's wrong. Eh, forget it. I'm just going to smoke my friend's 8-foot-long bong. And then like 20 minutes later, you have locked yourself in a closet and you're convinced that you're having a nervous breakdown. That happened to me multiple times.
Yeah, I don't fuck with edible marijuana. Fun fact.
Oh, yeah, that stuff is also difficult. All right, so with that little preview, Jimmy Reefer Cake's Ode to Reefer Cake.
Ode to Reefer.
Oh, Ode to Reefer.
Hypocrisy, 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 hypocrisy. Understand the things I know when it comes to hypocrisy. 'Cause I spend half my life out there using illegal weed. Do you see, Maine is legal. Yeah, it's legal. What about down there? Do you know people like it? They like reefer. Does anyone care? Unhappiness. 'Cause when I was young, they said reefer was bad. No cannabis, only Nancy Reagan with her eyes so sad. My mother, she'd scold me. She'd scold me. It was hard to bear. I told her I liked weed. Yeah, I liked weed. Does anyone care? It's legal down here. Is it legal down there? Does anyone care? Is it legal down there? Is it legal down there? Is it legal down there? Hypocrisy, hypocrisy, hypocrisy.
What do you think about that? Do you even care?
That is, and I don't have my soundboard to do the applause button, but it was it's a tribute, I think, to Dolores O'Rear, which is from the Cranberries. And
I like how he included the chords in case we want to play along with it.
Oh, does he include the chords?
I think he copied it down because it says verse one and verse two, and there's chorus one, and there's no chorus two or anything. Like
okay.
That,
but. And the hypocrisy and the, okay.
Core brand right. Propositions.
Matthew, why don't you, take your position? Yeah, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now, is the guy who inspired this song. Oh my God. What the? Jeez. Ugh, gross. All right, here is, this is what we call the Matthew Film Guy theme song. Joining us now.
Hi, everybody.
In studio, Matthew. Hi. Film Guy. Yeah, now you got to turn that microphone just so it's a little bit. There you go.
How's
there
that?
You go. Well, you had it right,
full
and then you switch
guy?
It. Yeah, put it in front of your face so that you're actually talking directly into it.
I think
it.
I know how to angle a mic.
All right. There you go. I mean, sometimes you think so, sometimes not.
Sometimes I think so and I'm right. Sometimes I think so and I'm wrong. That's my story.
Matthew Film Guy.
Yes, Sam.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Sam. It's really a pleasure to be here. I always enjoy coming to Brooklyn and visiting you near the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal.
Now, I would like to, a lot of times we spend a lot of time with pleasantries and whatnot.
Yeah, but...
Now, wait a sec. Why don't we do this? Before we get into your story about Andrew Cuomo.
Oh, yeah. You want to hear about that?
I do want to hear about that. But first, tell us, since you are on camera, people can see that you walked in with a bag full of stuff. We can look at the bag full of stuff in a bit. But what is that green, like, algae-looking thing that you're drinking?
It's just tea, Sam. It's green matcha tea. It's delicious. You can powder a little packet, put in a bottle, shake it up. Beautiful caffeine buzz with no drop-off. Matcha, it's been around. Japanese have been making it for guys. Help me out here.
Japanese have been making it for guys. Help me out here.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I was giving you like a whole like TED talk on matcha tea here. I didn't need to do that, did I?
I thought it was kratom at first.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not that like I'm not that into the supplements. Although I have done some nootropics there, Matt. I have tried that placebo effect. Don't ruin it if it is.
That was okay.
Well, kratom is something very different. Kratom is something that helps with opioid addiction, some people say. And it's also an opioid substitute.
Right.
It has, people have been, I don't know
I'm
too much about this.
I'm still just on the opioids.
They were contemplating outlawing it or making it an illegal substance during, I think, the late stages of the Obama administration. They ended up not doing it. If I remember correctly, it's been in the past. Maybe it was a year ago. I can't remember. But somebody had written, and I did a little reading into it, and they are now contemplating doing it again, basically putting it on some type of controlled schedule. Yeah, scheduled substance. So. Hopefully they don't do that because I think there obviously needs to be more study of it from a clinical standpoint, but it appears to have the properties that one would want as, you know, to help with opioid addiction.
I've been
very strange time to be doing that, incidentally, though.
On the show with you?
No. Oh. I'm saying not, no. Strange time to be at a time where you're like, supposedly Donald Trump is coming out with a big opioid program.
Right.
To be... Then attacking something that may have potential
to
help.
But is it patentable and saleable? Like, I think that's probably part of it, right?
You tell me. How much did you pay for your maca tea?
They're almost like a dollar a packet. Pretty pricey in terms of tea. But actually, you guys were talking about Iboga or Ibogaine before, was it?
Yes.
I'm interested in trying that. That's everything I've heard about that makes it sound fantastic. Not that I have a heroin addiction, but... Like sugary foods, carbohydrates, like all of those things that you use as a crutch emotionally, that substances, I think that could be good for me.
Oh, yeah, me too. I wrote a story a few years ago, actually, about a girl who does Ibogaine therapy at a center in Costa Rica. She's not a girl. She's a woman.
Now?
And it's super interesting, and I think as part of my own personal journey, I might like to go try it and write about the experience.
I think there are places in Canada that are doing it. I think I very glancingly looked into it, but it's like you have to commit to like a week at these centers.
Yeah,
I don't have a week.
I'm going to post that article in case anyone is interested. Because
and if anyone knows where I can get some Ibogaine, just
She's helped a lot of people.
At me.
All right. Well, this is a very drug-infused show today.
Yeah, why does that always happen when I feel like that happens when I show up?
Yeah, Joe Rogan.
So, all right, let's...
Rogan knows where we can get some.
All right, so let's start with, first off, just the backstory to this a little bit is that...
Briefly, because people are sick of hearing about trucks. But I will tell you that I live on Astoria Boulevard in Queens, which is right off of the Triborough Bridge and the Grand Central Parkway. It's basically an interchange between the Grand Central and then about a mile down is the BQE. Semi-tractor trailers have to get off. Historically, they had to get off 278 because of Robert Moses's no trucks on the parkways thing in New York and drive for 0.7 of miles on the normal people streets, Astoria Boulevard. So semi-trucks were going by the house. For years, I had been pestering my local officials. Finally, my local assemblywoman, Arvilla Simotis, shout out, she was able to push through a bill with the help of the other local officials, Constantinidis and, I'm putting a blank on all their names. Joe Crowley, the Democrat from my congressman, he was there. They all were able to get a DOT law change. So now, thanks to all that pressure they put on, trucks can actually stay on that stretch of highway. It's great. It's wonderful. And
the truckers are probably happy too.
They're thrilled. They don't want to have to be diving past pedestrians, women with baby carriages and so on. And they don't have to use that horrible Jake brake that like, brrr, that was the what I was quoted in articles as calling a soul piercing noise. It really was. And that's gone for the most part. Truckers are slowly getting the news. Anyway, they told me, Simotis told me that Cuomo had to sign off on this because it was a major change. You know, parkways was Robert Moses' great idea for all the rich people in Manhattan to drive out to the country unencumbered by the noise and the smoke of working people in trucks. So he did that. So I'm walking my dog the other day past Dunkin' Donuts, right by that same off-ramp by the Triborough Bridge. And who do I see in the back of his black SUV with the window rolled down yelling at his assistant to get him Dunkin' Donuts? Our governor. So some thoughts ran through my mind, but I thought I would take this moment to be genuinely grateful to him for what I thought was his part in this law change. So I said, hey, thanks a lot for that thing with letting the trucks go. And he's like, I didn't do that. I was like, well, next time take credit for something if your constituent is trying to tell you that you thanking you for something. He's like, what are you talking about? He was like dickish to me. Like maybe he hadn't had his coffee. But he was totally dickish to me. And I'm standing there with this cute puppy, my new dog, Mabel. And it's like, clearly this guy thought I was heckling him. I think if someone yells at you from the car off the street, he default thought I was being sarcastic.
Right, and you were saying, thanks for this.
Yeah, like, thanks a lot, buddy. No, right. I wasn't. Maybe I was coming off. And I slowly explained, no, it used to be. And he's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, all right. And then that was it, just like, bye-bye.
I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of the nice heckle, just yelling very kind things at people.
Hey, fucking thanks. You know, but
I do that at shows sometimes.
So he was just like, whatever. And then you just walked away.
Yeah. I was just, and I really said, like, you know, I was trying. The only thing I could think to say is, hey, I'm thanking you here, you know, like, so take credit when somebody thanks you. He was like,
I wish you would have said, you know, Cynthia Nixon would have handled this much better.
Man, I could have said a lot of things, but I was trying to be genuine because he really did make my life better in that one small way. But he had just come, apparently,
now,
from
what
laying
do you
down
think?
With kids for the gun thing. Yeah.
Oh, So what do you think? Maybe that's why he was so testy at that point. It's like, I had to pretend like I gave a shit.
Yeah. And he was on his way to another having to pretend to give
a shit. What do you think that he required from those state reps to sign off on that? Like, I'm going to need you to pretend
get
like...
Get the Greek community to vote as a block for me. You know, Astoria's a big Greek community. They're all basically represented there. I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. The guy like that, he's got ambitions. I'm sure it was something.
Interesting.
But he didn't ask anything from me. All I get is less, you know, noise and traffic.
And so is it significantly more pleasant there where you live?
I've noticed a definite downtick in the amount of trucks there, but there's still some, so it's going to filter out. They put up big signs that say trucks can now stay on, but these guys, I'm sure, do routes that they memorize, you know?
Right.
So it's slowly happening. The next step I'm starting to formulate, my next campaign is going to be to actually get them on allowed on that street, you know, so they have to do the thing.
Right.
Unless they're delivering. That's the next step. But
interesting. Yeah, that's the you're an incrementalist.
That's right. I don't believe in radical truck change all at once. I don't want to smash the fascist truck regime, but slow and steady wins the race.
Now, how is that story? Because I haven't been out there probably in about 7-8 years.
Yeah, since the internet, basically.
No, not since the internet.
Kidding. I'm just kidding.
But I haven't been out there in 7 or 8 years, I don't think.
Oh, man, it's going up like, it's basically like now Williamsburg. High rises are going up.
Oh, know? Really?
Yeah. 4 different corners and right in my little block have now 6-story buildings, which is what used to make a story a nice only 3 levels and below. It felt like the country in New York. Now it's being really renovated. I have a feeling that has something to do with the pressure that these trucks, you know, that may have helped me incidentally, you know, that there's more kind of like yuppie-ish.
Real estate pressure the real that's estate. Happening.
Because it does go by to new condos.
Is that
condos.
Diner still there?
Yes, but that just went on sale. There's a real estate listing for that diner to be sold for $10.5 million.
Holy
for that,
cow.
For that lot.
Wow.
Because it's right near the subway. It's 2 blocks from my house. That's the most valuable real estate there. So people moving to Astoria, it's over. It's been over.
Been over for a long time.
I've been there 20 years. I was kind of like the first.
You have been there
the
for 20
first
years.
Guy. I was probably the first guy.
There was nobody else living there.
It was just a bunch of Greek grandmothers. A bunch of Greek and Italian grandmothers. And they're like, "Why do you want to live in my building?" Like that's really who brought me in there.
Is that how they sounded?
Yeah. Hmm. Rest in peace, Ms. Mongitore.
Oh my God.
Should I put it away? I'm sorry.
The matcha is really it's distracting. So
it's got theanine.
So, okay, I don't know what that means.
Okay.
What have you been up to, Film Guy Matthew, as opposed to just you're going around looking for governors and any type of like public officials that you can thank?
They're finding me, yeah. But
what else have you been up to?
I've been working a lot, you know, Sam. I'm in my prime earning years, basically. So
no, I know that.
I've been making a lot of money as much as possible. Not caring where it comes from.
Right. I understand. And
what are you trying to tell us?
Well, he's trying to tell us that he's not had the time to work on the documentary
on
that
the
we had commissioned. Yeah, uh-huh. I think that's what's going on. People are asking.
People are talking. I hear people. They're saying to me, where's this documentary? I really want to make this documentary. Everybody out there, I am so dedicated to make this documentary. But like I said, I'm in my prime earning years. So at this point, I have to take the higher paying jobs as they come in. Now, I will get to this probably by the end of this month. I know I keep saying that every month, but 2 weeks. 2 weeks. That's what it's going to be. 2 weeks. Check back with me in 2 weeks. Isn't that Trump's standard?
Yes, it is Trump's standard line.
Yeah. Just
so you've been very busy with working.
Yeah. I'm basically working 2 full-time jobs for corporate clients and teaching 2 classes. I teach at Sacred Heart and, of course, my JCC adult learning class. So it's been a very hectic time. I've got 2 puppies, you know, now that Mary and I are raising a new puppy named Mabel. Shout out to Mabel.
Taking on more responsibilities with the puppies at this point? You can do whatever you want. I'm just saying, why are you doing that?
Why? I mean,
how can you justify that?
I won't say it was all Mary's idea because we love Dudley, our first dog. He was amazing. And then the opportunity came up to get his half-sister from a future litter, and we just...
A future litter?
Yeah, like, you know, you have to put a deposit down for these breeders. We only get the top-shelf dogs, you know. I'm sorry.
What kind of dog? Can I see a picture?
Havanese. Yeah, I can... Matt, should I, like, email
what
you?
What is that? What is a Havanese?
Let's put that up on the screen.
It's from Havana, you know, the Cubans. They cultivated these dogs. They're basically an offshoot of the Bichon Frise. I don't know if you're familiar with that. One of them just won the
American
Kennel
up?
Club. No.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a winner.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, a Havanese won.
That is so cute.
Can you see my particular dog?
Oh, those guys? Yeah, no, I don't know.
They're little,
like,
furry, super smart, really affectionate, really playful.
Pixar didn't happen.
Yeah, it did happen.
Is that your dog?
No, but that kind of looks like a cross between Dudley and Mabel.
Well, that's pretty cute.
Also, is Sam not paying you to make this documentary?
I mean, no, it's a relative.
Sam has
it's a relative.
Paid. Yes, actually, oh. Yes. No, that is a great point, Jamie. That is a great point. Actually, not only paid, prepaid. Prepaid.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes. All right. Well, yeah. Oh, no. There was payment. Believe me. There was payment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's. I didn't lose it. It's still there. It's still accruing interest at 0.25%.
Oh, did you put it in an escrow account?
At 0.25% or something, I think, maybe.
All right.
Well, I'll find a way to give you actual pictures.
I have a feeling right now. It's basically he spent it on two dogs.
Actually,
that's the documentary. Is the two Havanese dogs in his house?
There are worse ways to spend a bunch of money.
That's right.
When
that's
my
right.
friend was working in finance, my friend Neural, his like lasting legacy from this time, this horrible time in his life, is a very very cool designer cat.
Oh,
whoa, right, a designer cat.
I don't know what that means.
He's cool. It's like one of those wild cats. It's like part wild cat, and it looks like a wild cat, but it acts like a regular cat.
Holy shit.
It's okay. Cool. His name's Trotsky. He's really cool. Shout out to Trotsky.
All right. Well, so Matthew, and you, anything interesting going on in your classes right now? Are you teachers? Is there a particular film that you've been hawking to your elderly JCC folks?
Yeah, always. I have a. Do you want me to do my recommendation? Because it's
yes.
It's
let's kinda, do that. What are you doing? What are you looking up there?
I was still trying to find a picture.
Yeah, forget
of
about
Dudley and Mabel.
Forget about it. We know what the Havanese. Yeah, let's not get too carried away.
Yeah. Well, I love my dog so much. I love him so much.
I'll look at pics after the show.
All right. Fine. So I have a movie to recommend for you guys this week that really touched my elderly film class very much. You know, I show them alternatingly kind of harrowing and challenging films and then kind of more middle of the road kind of
on Golden Pond.
Well, no, not
like
we haven't been there yet. I'm not look what you have to look forward to. No, I basically show them, you know, your kind of standard international art cinema and then like some really wacko kind of out there outsider kind of films. And this week, I saw one that was on my to-see list for many years, and it went over really well. It's by a filmmaker, a Spanish filmmaker, who only made a few films, and it's called The Spirit of the Beehive. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Spirit of the Beehive? Anybody? Shout out? I'm sure someone on the chat will know it. Because it's one of those kind of like masterpieces of the international cinema of the 70s. It has... you know, it's kind of one of these like every frame a painting kind of movies, but that's not really what gets me about it. It's just, it's almost a silent movie. And it's one of the movies that really shows you that films can have a kind of socio-political background or kind of basis, but not be about the kind of limited earthly interests of politics. And it's about, it's basically set right post-Franco in Spain. And you kind of just see it on the periphery. You see soldiers on trains. You see like a deserter. Yeah, and this family seems to be kind of one of the, you kind of start to assume that they're kind of one of the father is kind of a fascist sympathizer. And he's a writer and he lives in this country estate basically all alone. And it's really about these two little kids. And it's just one of the most, like, I hate mawkish films about children. Oh, they're so innocent and so pure. But this is really a film that makes you understand, like, how precious and how malleable we are when we're young. And how our imagination is still so powerful at that age. So it kind of has a fantasy-ish element. It kind of coincides with the movie Frankenstein, because this village gets, like, the film shown. It's like, the movie opens with the kids all going, yeah, the movie's here. So it kind of has this nod to the power of cinema. So I highly recommend, if all you film fans out there haven't seen Spirit of the Beehive, definitely go see it. And we can
now I'm a little bit surprised because you, I mean, having films that are really sort of cinematic is not necessarily what you're known for, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's you know, you're not.
I know what you mean by that. I think the films I like are cinematic, but I know what you mean by that.
I mean photographic.
Right.
Photographic.
Yeah.
You like more, you're more naturalistic in your taste. Is that not right?
Let's just say I'm not wowed by picture postcard photography. Like,
where are you on Terrence Malick?
Oh, I actually love Terrence Malick because it's, apart from his kind of every frame of painting style, he also eschews sort of normal narrative, normal structure.
Right.
He has a lot of kind of, you know, poetic kind of imagery that isn't just beautiful, but is also kind of mysterious. And, you know, I think he thinks of himself as kind of an American Andrei Tarkovsky in that sense that the things don't necessarily translate. Like, it's not metaphorical, like, oh, this means man's inhumanity to man, but it's kind of evoking the mystery of life, and for the most part. So yeah, I love his movies. I haven't seen the last few, with which I've heard he's kind of gone off the rails a little bit with that, but up into To the Wonder, I think I love them all.
All right.
Well, where are you on Terrence Malick?
Oh, no, I'm a fan. I have not seen, you know, I think the last one I saw was like Thin Red Line, probably. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
He only had three for like 25 years.
Yes.
And then he just,
and I loved all three of those.
Yeah, me too.
And then
especially Badlands, his first movie. That's like one of the great
Badlands
road
is
movies.
An amazing movie. And then even the one with Richard Gere.
Yeah, Days of Heaven.
Days of Heaven. I also thought was for that little kid with the voiceover was fantastic.
She's the same girl who's in Out of the Blue, who I recommended, I think, to you guys many moons ago. Another favorite film of mine that Mary and I now have a poster of in our office.
Okay.
Dennis Hopper. Were you here for that one? Maybe that was a Michael only one. Out of the Blue, she's like a punk rock kid. She lives with her alcoholic father and mother. Out of the Blue, everybody.
Sounds like something you would tell us to watch.
Yeah. It's amazing. That's one of the harrowing ones that I showed the class. And they were like, why did you show us this?
Yeah, I mean, how are they reacting to that?
Look, it's one of those movies where as soon as the movie's over, they're like, oh my God. But then when we start to talk and unpack it and kind of get into it, they're like, I love this movie. Well, actually, what they say is, I love the discussion. The movie made me feel terrible, but I love this discussion, and it made me understand it. They all talk like you.
Almost every single character who shows up on this show sounds like that.
Yeah, but in my case, this old Jewish ladies, that's what they talk like. So
okay, all right.
It just so happens that you evoke that from Michael.
I guess so. Spirit of the Beehive, ladies and gentlemen. And in Spanish, of course, that is El Espíritu de la Comalameña.
Right.
I believe. So,
yes, good job, Sam.
Thank you. Spirit of the Beehive. Now, Matthew, film guy.
That's it. Yep, that's it.
You're not just known for your films.
Yeah.
You're not known for
films. I'm not known for films. Having not made that really any films, how could I be?
Whatever happened to the documentary you were making on yourself?
It's still going. I'm still going, so it's still going. I'm going to wait to see how the story ends, and then I'll make it.
Hmm.
No, I'm actually.
Let's hope you don't get hit
it.
By a bus, because God forbid someone has to be responsible for all that footage.
But that would be a good ending.
Yeah, that would be a great ending. But maybe you should get the thing basically locked in.
Yeah. Well,
like, I wouldn't say picture lock, I would get like 7/8 of it done. So that
can I tell you something? Rick Prelinger, have you heard of this guy?
No.
He is a archivist from San Francisco, and he's made it his life's work to basically archive as much film that's been abandoned or. He has, if you go to archive.org, it's an amazing resource. I assign my students an editing project using all the footage because it has like old industrial films, old home movies of people, old what they used to call the rear projection, those plates, those like 35 millimeter of just like streets from the 30s and 40s they use. And so all this film. And he asked people to donate their home movies. So as part of my film, I donated to him all of the home movies that my grandfather and father shot since 1947, and he is transferring it to Hi-Res 2K and sending it back to me in exchange to be able to put it in his archive. Amazing stuff.
Whoa.
So, yeah. I already spent thousands of dollars transferring some of it myself.
I was going to say, why aren't people doing that all the time?
Well, they are if they know him. He comes around with the films and does screenings and stuff. He just did one at the Museum of Moving Image in Astoria, Queens. And also at NYU, and look him up because he asks for donations, and it's like there's a backlog, so I'm not going to get it for maybe another 6 months, but and then he will store them in like a climate controlled place. So I love in the pursuit of my own documentary of my family and myself on home movies. I've just gone into this world of home movie films, and it's just beautiful to watch. He appreciates them as they are. He's not trying to make anything out of them. He's not trying to narratize them or whatever. He just shows them. And it's some amazing, beautiful stuff.
Wow. Now, is there a way to get... I've got a couple of films.
Only celluloid. You know, he stops at any videotape. So that you have to do yourself. But,
I think we did have it celluloid, actually.
Yeah, Super 8, 8mm, 16mm, 35 if you were rich, I guess.
Those found footage movies are pretty interesting.
Yeah. I almost recommended another one to you guys, but it was so like scary and harrowing that I decided to go Spirit of the Beehive. But I recently showed my class a movie called... Dear Zachary, a letter from a father to his son. And has anyone ever heard that one? It's like a basically like a Talking Heads kind of sit down documentary. But it's very artfully done, and it's really a terrible. It's like a guy's friend dies while his son is being born, and he kind of wants to put a documentary together about like what his dad was like, and then it turns into this like crime story basically. And I don't want to give away anything about it because it's. But you can put that one on the list too, Dear Zachary. Yeesh, but made with home movies. I love those kinds of movies. Alan Berliner does that.
You know, there was a guy, I met a guy at when Who's the Caboose was out on the film festival circuit.
Hello, Caboose.
It got into the Jewish film festival circuit. Because it was, I can't remember, you got into one, and then once you get into one, like, they're like, oh.
Yeah, Jewish geography.
Yeah, and I met a guy, and I can't remember, maybe it was in Seattle, one of them, a guy named Peter Forzaks. Who is a Hungarian artist who did would do found footage films from the Nazi era.
Oh, wow.
He did one about the Danube that I saw at that time.
Well, I'm going to write his name down.
I can't remember what the name of it, but it was Peter Forjaks or something.
Right, some Hungarian, a lot of Z's and C's.
I think it was actually G's.
Okay.
But now, okay, so there we have it. The film, of course, is the, I can't remember, something about the beehive.
Spirit of the Beehive.
Spirit of the Beehive.
Yeah, or Dear Zachary, if you want to
or
be
Dear
like
Zachary. Now, you're not just known for your the films that you have yet to make. And you're not just known for
discussing them.
Discussing films and suggesting films. You're also known for hawking all sorts of garbage on eBay.
Yes.
Matthew Film Guy.
It wasn't garbage originally because these are all things that usually I just had around the house.
Well, is there anything that's garbage originally?
Good point, Sam. But you know what? They're not broken is what I'm trying to say. They're not unusable. They're not ready to go, and they would be going in the garbage only for not having somebody value them as much as I know somebody out there will.
One man's trash is another man's treasure.
That's right, and especially when it's signed by Sam Cedar, right, everybody?
There you go. So
what
do we have today in your special bag? I feel like we should have like a Mr. Rogers neighborhood music, like the tinkly, tinkly.
What'd you bring us? Oh,
look at that.
Just a couple things.
Now, wait basically, a second. Now, that Incredible Hulk bag there, I noticed you, that is not the Mr. Rogers. What?
It's like porn music.
You have an Incredible Hulk shopping bag. Is that a...
That's also available.
Why do you still have the label on there? Do you think
because it's new with tags? New with tags, everybody. Unused.
Well,
originally $129, but could be yours for whatever you're willing to pay.
All right.
This is basically what I do: is anything that's not really selling well, I bring here.
Why don't you look around here and take stuff maybe in the back?
I keep promising to do that. We should do like a real one, not like a signed Sam trinket thing. But here, look. This is the big. There's a few surprises I have here, but this is the.
Let's not get too carried away.
Here. No, we're going to. This is what
this
was. Yeah, Ronald Reagan's. Tell the affiliates we're going long. Ronald Reagan's basically came up with this idea. These Bible flashcards that I had selling for nobody wanted. He basically came up with this idea, and I think it's a good one. I want to leave these here with you. Okay, so this is like a long term project.
Oh God.
I want everyone who comes in studio to pick a Bible card and sign it. So that's you. That's Matt. That's Jamie and Michael.
We don't
and,
have many people come into studio. Right. But, I mean, for
so it'll take a year or
Michael's
two.
Show, a year or two?
I don't care how long it takes. But we'll get like Cliff Schechter one day. We'll get Matt Taibbi one day. We'll get, you know, whomever, Judy Gold one day. Just leave it here and just make it a part of your regularly scheduled thing that whenever they leave, they sign, they pick a Bible flashcard. Like, you know, Isaiah. Wouldn't you like to sign Isaiah?
I can't believe these things didn't move already.
I know, me neither. You.
I mean,
here's Elijah. Leave a chair for him.
Of course.
Oh, Solomon, that has to be the one you sign.
Man, these right? Guys, yeah, of course.
The Wisdom of Solomon.
Wisdom of Solomon.
Yeah. Or Tower of Babel, you know? Maybe that's what's going on here. I don't know. Huh. Anyway, so that's one thing, all right? You agreed to do this, so, okay.
I did?
Yeah. Copy of Amelie. It's not a great movie, really, to be honest. Some people like it.
But it is a DVD. And I
it's
mean,
actually a VHS.
VHS. And one of the things with VHS is that, like a movie like that that people don't realize, is that all it takes is a piece of scotch tape, and you can record right over.
Exactly. It, so. Record your shows on it. That's right. Good job.
I'm a Philistine. I like Amelie.
It was all right. It's all right. I'm glad. I'm not, I don't mean to.
Wasn't Jamie showing.
Sam used to be in Sex and the City. Here are some.
I wasn't used to be. I was in one.
Yeah, and it's not on these actually, but still, you could sign them.
Right. Okay. Does not include one of me.
No, but you'll be signing.
Oh, well,
this is an interesting documentary that I can't believe no one's bought because I had to buy it from Israel. It's a documentary called "Tale of the Wolf" or "Cry of the Wolf," and "Tale of the Wolf," and it's basically like an anthropomorphized story about a wolf and his family. It's really
is it all
cool.
in Hebrew?
It's subtitled. Subtitled, yeah. But it's in Hebrew.
Subtitled English subtitles?
Yeah, everything the wolf says is subtitled. Well, it's a voiceover, obviously. But
No.
Yeah.
In other words, if I sit Saul down, because he loves wolves.
Yeah.
But he does not speak Hebrew.
Or read English?
No, he's five.
Yeah. So it's still fascinating photography. They really like live with these wolves for a while.
It's not opened. How do you know what the photography is?
Oh, no. It's open. It's open. I just very carefully slid it out of the plastic.
Oh, my God. You're psychotic.
So it could be resold.
You're insane.
I'm just thoughtful, Sam. I'm thoughtful. More VHSs. This was from my friend.
Ooh.
The original
Emma
Avengers.
Peel,
yeah.
Right?
The original. Sealed in the plastic, but you can open it to sign it, I think, right?
Oh, yeah.
This is actually already selling. I thought this was a timely thing. I think an old roommate of mine made this. It's a wooden cross with Jesus and a bullet. So I think this is a...
Wait, is that a live bullet?
Actually, I don't know.
I would be just a little bit careful with like scratching the...
If I just throw it too hard?
Well, I mean, you need a hammer on the back of that. But,
yeah.
I mean...
I think we're all right with this.
Could be a little...
Someone's already bidding on this, so get it while it's hot. You could sign this with a little pen.
Right on the cross.
Yes, exactly.
Great.
Of course.
That could be a ready-made art piece right there.
That's actually how I conceived of it, is like a ready-made art piece. It's this, like, here it is, cross and bullet.
America.
Says a lot.
You really think I'm going to add value to that by signing it?
Definitely, because right now it's only worth 99 cents.
All right.
And then this is a sheet of PETA stickers. Just a bunch of stickers.
Hell yeah.
By PETA. Oh, yeah? Maybe
just kidding. PETA's terrible.
You could bid on
that. They make vegans look like assholes.
Do they? Okay, so this is all just the preamble. I had some other
Jesus,
things.
Really?
I had some other things laying around the house that I really think is really going to be of the best value to just a couple of these.
Oh, my God.
Just
holy cow, ladies and gentlemen. Two talking Dennis Miller. Wow.
Yeah, just had them around. Thought if you signed
them. Did you
them,
really
might...
have them around?
Yes.
You've had them around for like the past 18 years? No. Where
Sam,
did you...
I'm a businessman, okay? So when I see an opportunity, I take advantage of it.
I can't fucking believe you're spending more time going around looking for a Dennis Miller doll than you are doing my damn documentary.
Takes no time at all, Sam. Let me tell you. That takes no time at all.
Is there a robust secondary market for talking Dennis Miller dolls?
There's about to be.
Where did you get those?
eBay.
So you bought them on eBay, and you're turning around and reselling them... With what is it? My signature, and you think they're going to? You think what? Now, what
I, no, I'm doing this as a public service.
This is arbitrage, basically, right?
Yeah. So you signing these? Somebody wants to own a piece of you
press
and
the
a
button.
Piece of this.
Just press the button.
Yeah.
That's it. It works.
That's it, Chacha. You found the button, vertebrae 4.
Now whoa! He
what? Move away from the doll. What are you, a chiropractor?
The it still works.
Oh, yeah, they both work.
Hey, you know Kim Jong-il in North Korea must be a bad guy because you usually don't get to lead up a country when you look that freaky. What's with the hair? He's like a Chia dictator.
Now we have our
you're
own.
You're like a Chia dictator.
Now we have our own Chia dictator.
There we go. All right. So,
just anytime you're ready.
I will sign all those with the gold and silver pens,
I think it's probably worth more if you do it on camera.
What? On camera?
I think it's probably going to be better for this.
Well, let me
experience.
Do one or two, but I'm not going to sign all that stuff on camera.
No,
I'm going to do a radio
show. We'll do these first.
All right, hand me these. I will sign the Dennis Miller dolls, the talking dolls. I'm not going to actually sign the doll. I will sign the box.
Sign the box.
Where do you think, what will provide... Like right here?
Yeah, there you go.
Right on Dennis.
I gave you a silver one because even on the plastic.
The plastic?
Yeah. See if that works. There's no redo, so be careful.
How about I'll do a little of this?
There you go. Hey, Chocho-san. Yeah, so that's me.
Okay, I signed this one. Bop, bop, bop. Sam Cedar.
Oh, that's amazing. Show the camera there.
Right, there it is. Bop, bop, bop.
There you go.
Little heart, Sam Cedar.
Yeah.
And this one should we do in silver as well?
Yeah,
I think it shows and, nicely. How about this? Okay. And I've signed this one. I am so depressed. Sam Cedar. There you
perfect.
Go.
Perfect. That's lovely, Sam.
Yeah, okay. Maybe I'll just put, I'll put a little DM so people understand that I'm talking about him, not me.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I am not depressed,
no,
ladies
no,
and gentlemen.
No, there's other things, but the other things wrong with you.
I have other issues, but it is not this. Oh, my God. I didn't see this.
Tell
this
us.
This is just... This is horror. This is a horror.
It is. It's. I can't believe this thing was made for sale. It's
Holy
really
shit.
Unbelievable.
This is what it says. God. Quote, the Lenny Bruce of the new millennium. The most cerebral, astute, and clever stand-up ever to put mouth to microphone, said Hollywood Reporter. There is a picture of him with President Bush and with President Reagan. They, you know, of course, they did this because he was, this is in 2003, he was, now, wait a second. Holy cow. Did you see this?
Which thing?
Oh, my gosh.
I bet that picture of him and Bush is from the...
No, according to this, there are two separate models. This is the model DMPG. And there is also a model DMPG-13, which has explicit language.
Whoa!
These are both DMPGs.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
All right, well, now the
you
hunt
better
is
get on.
On
it.
The hunt is on.
Holy cow.
It's
they were
be
originally
all over
from
by
TalkingPresidents.com. That's where I bought mine.
Right.
I bought mine. I have the Rumsfeld one. I had the Cheney one. All right, here, take these off my hands, please.
Yeah, all right.
Do you have the clean versions of those or the dirty versions?
I had all the clean versions.
What does dirty Cheney sound like?
I mean, I have a feeling he's just like, fuck off, is what he was saying. I mean, it was all, that was basically what it was.
Don't
whole
you
Patrick
hate the fucking
Leahy.
Muslims?
All right, well, so that is our show for today. We're going to head into the fun half. Matthew Film Guy, if you'll hang out with us, maybe
I would
read
love
some quotes
to.
From
It'd
the biblical
honor.
Flashcards.
And It'd
we've
be
got,
my honor.
We've got some sound from Stormy Daniels' lawyer. Apparently, there's still a lot of Stormy Daniels. We have a video of Bernie Sanders at a walkout protest. Where was this video from? We'll take a look at it. Let's find out where we come from. Kids went wild seeing Bernie. And, of course, Stephen Hawking passed away yesterday, I think it was. And it's sad. I mean, he was a pretty an amazing guy.
But he lived like 50 years longer than they gave him time for.
Yeah.
30 years.
Yeah.
It was
but nothing better than seeing Stephen Hawking making fun of Piers Morgan. So we will check that out. Folks, we will be back Monday. If you are a member, we will be back in just a moment. 646-257-3920. See you then.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy.